Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. Each episode covers the brightest and boldest ideas from the world's leading experts in software development. Tune in for practical lessons, compelling theories, and plenty of inspiration. GoTo gathers the brightest minds in the software community to help developers tackle projects today, plan for tomorrow, and create a better future. Stay up to date with the latest in tech through GoTo's top-rated events held online and in person in cities like Amsterdam, London, Copenhagen, and Chicago, and by subscribing to the GoTo Conferences YouTube channel, where you can find thousands more high-quality dev talks. Learn more at gotopia.tech.
Welcome to the GoTo Podcast. I am your host for today, Glauber Costa, and I am joined today by Piotr Sarna. Piotr and I worked together a long time ago when I had a full head of hair at Scylla, where I was one of the founding engineers. At the time, Piotr was an ascending engineer, getting more awesome by the day pretty fast. And today, I believe, Piotr, I could say that an internationally acclaimed book author. You have just published a new book. You have been writing a lot of content. And today, I think we have a lot to talk about it. So Piotr, for starters, why don't you tell us more about yourself, your career, and what got you here?
Thanks, and hello, everyone. My name is Piotr. People usually refer to me as Sarna, first and foremost, because it sounds funny in Portuguese, and also it's easier to pronounce for most folks. I've been working on distributed systems most of my career, starting with CittaDB. I would also like to clarify that full head of hair is a little bit of...
You're right. I'm being a little bit...
Okay, let's.
It was already on its way out, but when we met, so it's just the full transformation.
I've seen the full transformation. That's true. Yeah. While at CittaDB, I was gently forced to write lots of content, which then kind of made me write books in plural. Now I also do AI because it's trendy, but I'm still a distributed system developer deep down. Yeah, so that's
awesome. And at Scylla, we actually had a lot of Piotrs, right? It's a fairly common Polish name, as far as I understand. So we kept having more and more Piotrs, and we had to find a way to differentiate between y'all. The last name usually is very hard to say, but in your case, it's easy. So we usually just went with Sarna. And Sarna, I'll keep referring to you like that, as I'm used to. Tell us more about the book. So when did you release the book? What is the book all about? And let's dive into that.
This book is not really a technical book. It's a meta-technical book because it's about writing technical content. The main reason we wrote it with Cynthia was, first of all, because Cynthia came up with the idea and I couldn't resist. And second of all, it was kind of a natural continuation of the first book we wrote with two more people back then when I was still a CittaDB developer. The previous one was about database performance. And then once you start releasing books, I suppose you can't really stop. I'm already kind of urged to write some more things, even though I don't have any faintest idea what more to write, but I really do want to do this. So it was kind of a natural continuation, and the main motivation for the book was that Cynthia had this excellent idea that since she's an experienced writer, as in writer of actual English, and I can produce technical stuff, we have two different perspectives on how to write technical posts that are, well, I don't know, high quality, interesting. So we just combined those two perspectives into a single book so that people can hopefully learn more.
And somebody meeting you for the first time and getting to know you wouldn't guess right out of the bat that you would, you know, be so skilled writing and doing this so much. In fact, there was usually something that people used to say at Scylla that you were caught smiling once, right? So you don't seem usually, you're not a very friendly person. You're not an extrovert. So you have this persona of the engineer that is really writing code. And as I said, that change at Scylla when you were, what was the word that you used? Like gently forced to start writing content. I want to dig a little bit deeper into that experience. How did it feel for you it must have been, you know, quite challenging and quite scary, quite honestly, in the beginning. So let's talk more about that.
First of all, I denounce being seen smiling once. Somebody made it up. I didn't smile even once.
Okay. But it must have been in your imagination, kind of thing.
It was an urban legend.
Yeah, urban legend, yeah.
At first, when I heard that maybe I should write a post about something that I implemented, I just tried to figure out how to, refuse without being fired, let's say. I think it was in the first month or two of my job. And I was really excited to have joined Scylla, and I didn't want to, refuse an executive order to write. But I did have something that people usually probably experience at stage, like this kind of stage fright.
Yeah.
That happens even though I just, technically, when I think about it now, it makes absolutely no sense because I just wrote stuff offline and then published it. So there's no stage, nobody's staring at me. But I kind of had similar thoughts about it. I was terrified that the general public could look at something that I produced, which made even less sense thinking that I've already spent a few years at open source projects by then. So I both interacted with the community and wrote published code, basically, which is not much different. And yet, yeah, I really didn't want to do that. But I also figured that if I don't do that, then it's going to maybe be a problem in the future, in my professional future. So I just did.
And do you remember what was it about? The first experience, I guess we never forget, eh?
Yeah, it was a super boring piece about some filtering implementation that wasn't even, from a technical point of view, it wasn't really that interesting. It was just catching up with features that virtually any other database had for 30 years. Yeah, so that was just that, which was one more reason why I was kind of unsure if I want to write about that, because I wondered if anybody could ever even look at it and glance at it and say it's interesting. But then I do remember some people quoting it at Scylla Summit and so on in person, that they read this filtering piece and they learned something from it. So, yeah.
I find that fascinating because, I've been doing this for a long time. I was probably one of the people, I don't quite remember, but I was probably one of the people involved in forcing you. At the time, I was trying to help a lot with the content machine at Scylla, and we needed more writers. I've been writing for a long time, a lot of pieces. I wrote a lot of pieces when there. I wrote pieces before that. I kept writing after I left. But even as a experienced person, there is always this fear, and I'm speaking for myself, but from what you're saying, it seems that you feel the same thing, that people are just going to find it too obvious, right? So who even wants that? And sometimes it's a similar phenomenon, I guess, to imposter syndrome, because you do have this fear about who in the world would pay attention to this thing that I wrote. I mean, who cares? This thing number one. But turns out in a lot of situations, I mean, it feels obvious to you, but people do care. I mean, and I had the same feeling in a lot of situations, that I write something that for me is the most obvious thing in the world, and then a subset of people, I mean, of course, some things are less obvious and some things are more obvious, but there's always a subset of people who enjoy it.
Yeah, I was worried, first of all, that people would find it too obvious and too uninteresting. But then I was also scared that there would be some obvious mistake and I would just publicly, shame myself saying something untrue or, buggy in public, which, actually never happened to me so far. Nobody actually approached me saying that something's wrong. And if they did, it's actually constructive criticism, so it would be nice.
That is such an engineer-minded concern. You know, if it's a politician, it's like I'm concerned that somebody will. It's the opposite, right? Just I'm supposed to be lying, and then maybe people are gonna think I'm telling the truth. But for us as engineers, and you touched on a great point. I mean, we always want to make sure that what we're writing is accurate, and at the same time, people who are reading your posts, you don't know who they are, but you have to assume that they don't have the same level of knowledge that you have in this particular thing, of course, that you're writing about. So sometimes it's important to generalize things and come up with simpler explanations. Do you struggle with that, or is it something that you acquire with time, right? Just conveying those things to an audience that is interested at the topic and they're technical for sure, but they might not be domain experts in what you're writing about?
There needs to be a balance in here because you do want to go deep on some topics, but you also don't, you also can't go down the rabbit hole and be too technical. Yeah, it's hard because you need to decide before writing, I suppose, if you're targeting general public, if you want this post to be Hacker News trending or whatever, or if you would rather make a post that's more like your own personal documentation of something very, very deep down for a specific niche. So I think I wrote both, and I always tried to just usually refer to some third party documentation if I want people to learn more about something. So stop at some point with the deep down, very technical pieces and say, if you want to learn more, just look at this. This is a great article on the topic. And meanwhile, I'll just continue with this higher level stuff to actually make the blog post concise enough to, you know, to be possible to read it in 5 or 10 minutes, not 35.
Yeah, you've done both, but I suppose that, and you touched on a great point that I want to get back to, but I suppose that there is a class of articles that usually, generally speaking, does better than others, right? So if you're writing something that is more like your mental dump, I would presume, and this does match my experience, but I would presume that you have a lot fewer readers than if you write a more general purpose thing that tries to keep it technical, of course, but try to raise the level of abstraction. Does that match what you've seen so far?
If you categorize your readers, or let's say very interested readers that are actually read the whole thing and then even interact with you on some comment section or anything else, then you can write an article that fewer people will write, but 90% of them will actually be really interested in the topic. Mm-hmm. But then if you really just want as many people as possible to just click on it and skim through it, then you can also achieve that. And then you don't go very deep and you just cover a few interesting pieces in a more shallow way. And then it's more likely to land on Hacker News front page. But you should also expect, I think, that like 90% of comments authors just basically seen the title and then commented something and didn't even try.
Yes. Yeah, I think this is a phenomenon that it goes beyond just blog posts and articles. It's more of a modern, driven by social media, I suppose, yeah, way of people behaving, which is like, I've seen the article and I've seen the title. And we do try to convey, I guess, the, you know, a decent amount of information in the title and catch readers in, give them the, you know, there's so much information around that you're fighting for attention with so much content that you have to have a catchy title, I presume. But then from that title, people sometimes think, hey, I understand, you know, I know what this person means and I have an opinion about it, but I haven't even read the piece, right? We see a lot of that. I mean, I would say that, especially when you share something on social media, a decent chunk of people that are commenting, like, they haven't really read what you wrote, yeah, right? And then they're complaining about stuff that it's in the beginning. And I guess, look, it's just the way it is, right? Just the way it is. And you touched on something. Like, I remember my initial experiences were always, hey, look, it's almost like I'm writing a scientific article. So I want to put all the information here. I want to make sure that every single thing is covered. But then you end up writing something that takes like 20 minutes to read, 25 minutes to read, and or 15 even minutes to read. And at the end of the day, I mean, you know, sure, from the point of view of like how complete this is, it might be a quote unquote better article, but then nobody reads it. And you see that there is people will read the introduction and people will read the conclusion. And you touched on that point. It's got to be short, right? And it's got to, like, people will read this and extract this one idea. And that's a heuristic that I develop over time. There is one idea that I want to convey in this post. Anything else might be important, but it's not the core of it. So, you know, it's a tangent, so don't touch on it. How did you learn this? Is this something that, you know, somebody taught you and you listen, or it was more of a stubborn guy like me that had to publish like a bunch of articles until you see, okay, this is, I'll make peace with the fact that this is the way?
I have some strong opinions of how short attention span is nowadays. It's like, TikTok didn't help, let's say.
TikTok didn't help at all. Just did so.
I also noticed myself as a reader that I often skim through the general structure, like headers first, and only then I qualify the article if I'm going to read it at all or not. And I did tend to ignore articles that were so long that I couldn't even find, you know, the scroll bar with my cursor. Yeah. That suggests that I'm not going to spend time reading it anyway. Sometimes I do or I should, but I just don't in practice. What made me do it? Well, at SillaDB, I think we even preferred those long scientific posts, at least to a degree, because nobody ever told me, please, can we just drop this paragraph? But I do remember it once or twice from one of the Turso blog posts when I got, I think it was the Zig piece maybe, reviewed. And either you or one of the folks, what was the name?
Probably Doug.
Content. Doug, yeah, exactly.
Doug, yeah. And just for a quick pause for context, after Scylla, we also worked together at Turso, which is the company where I am at today, currently. Piotr is sadly no longer with us, but we also wrote a bunch of content there too. So that's just because we haven't mentioned before. I want to give the listeners this context. But
yeah, we worked together for quite some time, including working on content. And either you or Doug pointed out like the whole paragraph and said that while this is very nice and true and interesting, does anything actually change? That the main goal of the article remain the same if we just drop this whole thing? And I'd say that, yeah, actually, when I delete it, the article is still as coherent and complete as without it. So let's just reduce it to its minimal form.
And you do have this feeling, I guess, if you're too, we end up getting too married to the things we produce. And that's true for software, for articles. Yeah. And then there's this sense of like, I want to convey this information. But when you take a step back, I mean, do I really need to convey this particular piece of information? Because the reality is that the reader will extract one point. I mean, and right. So it might putting more things might even take the reader's in tangents that distract from the main point. So you take it out to make this thing shine. And did you notice a improvement in the kind of reception that you had? Did you feel like your writing style improved when you started having this discipline about, you know, it's as much as about taking it out as it is about putting it in?
Yeah, so first of all, this Zeek piece was my success. I don't know if deleting this particular paragraph was the reason, of course, but it definitely didn't ruin it. And I liked it because it's kind of like those, when you go technical for a moment, there are those automated ways of minimizing computer programs that they just randomly delete some portions of it and check if they still pass all the tests. And if they do, then you just continue and iterate until you can't minimize further. And you should kind of do that to a degree with a blog post as well. Just keep dropping things. If after dropping is still a complete article, then it's better because it's shorter. More people will fit it into their 5-second attention span. And you just pretty much share the same, like mostly the same amount of information with less text, which is like more optimal for everyone. So yeah, I do enjoy various optimizations on text right now after spending quite some time posting.
That's great. And what keeps you motivated to continue writing? Because you keep doing it, right? And as we said, not only you kept doing it, you've done more of it. You wrote two books, which I guess it's a very different experience than writing blogs and articles. So first of all, I want to touch on that. I mean, why do you do it? Did you just fall in love with that? Or is there a reason for you to write? It's like a marketing reason for a company. It could be. I mean, that's part of the reason we do a lot of technical writing in my company, which is just like, hey, this is one of the best ways that we have to reach an audience and to build trust with an audience of developers. But I guess there might be other reasons too. So what is the thing that keeps you pushing?
Yeah, so there are actually many aspects to why I continue. The first clarification is not what, but who. And it's Cynthia who pushes me towards writing more.
Oh, yeah.
More books in particular. But as for other reasons, the main one might sound like a joke, but I'm actually very serious, is that I'm very mean and I like screwing with future myself and committing to writing something and then being mad at past myself to agreeing to work and now I need to deliver. Because it's just how it works for me better. I just do more things if I first commit to it, even though I suspect that in the future I would rather be lazy and not do it. So that's one thing. And with books, it's even easier because if you've got a publisher over your head, then you're reading it to deliver stuff or they keep pinging you to death. Or Cynthia pings them to death if they don't.
You've been mentioning Cynthia a lot, and she's definitely one of the luminaries in the book writing territory and articles in general. I mean, she's a great resource that Cilla has. And it's a person that I came to appreciate over time as well. What's the main difference in your experience between writing a piece with a person like Cynthia that is helping you, that is directing you, it's a co-author of your work versus writing a piece by yourself?
So I might be a little impaired by now, and I can't really imagine writing a larger piece just by myself.
Just by yourself. Yeah, I get used to it, yeah.
Yeah, because the way it's easier with technical posts because then you write mostly technical content, and then it's still better probably if you find if it's a corporate blog, then you just find somebody who can edit it a little bit, mm-hmm. make it a little bit more coherent. Even if you don't, then it's probably fine because it's technical content, so it's the code snippets and benchmarks that matter more often than your perfect English. But for longer pieces, I couldn't imagine just figuring out how to write a whole book by myself because I mostly spurt out some barely coherent content and then leave it in the Google Doc, and then after one or two days, it's rewritten in beautiful prose. So that's how it worked for me. I would struggle a lot. I would probably lack motivation to also to write a whole book just by myself because I probably get too technical. I lack this prose writing skills to actually produce 300 pages of something that's readable.
In the main topic, which is like technical writing and content, blogs, articles, etc. As I said, I think part of the reason we do it is because you want to, as a professional, there are many benefits in communicating your work to others. There are benefits to you. A lot of people had said in the past that they've got job offers through blogs that they wrote. We actually hire people who wrote blogs in the past because there's a lot of signals in that. Right there, at the very least, there is a signal there that you're willing to put your face out and face the crowd. Right, as you mentioned before, there's no stage fright, but because there's no stage, but there is definitely like the comment section, and you're putting yourself out there. And for the company, there are benefits as well because if you do it right, I guess you make your technology, you make your services better known. I think a lot of people don't do it right, which is something that we can touch on as well, but. When you ask somebody to write a piece, as you describe, when Cilla first came to you and said, hey, write a piece about this filtering thing you've done, and then they inform you that, look, you know, somehow you doing well in this company is predicated or at least boosted by you writing. One of the things that happens is that people say, okay, I could write more, but how am I supposed to find out what you write about? I mean, how to generate those ideas? And now talking about your book a little bit, one of my favorite parts of the book, which I read thoroughly, by the way, so it's a fantastic book. But my favorite part is when you try to distill this into patterns, right? Don't know what you write about? Why not rewrite it in X? Thoughts on this, etc. So what are those patterns? How did you identify them? And what is your favorite pattern to write about?
Yeah, so this patterns idea was one of the first things we figured out when we discussed how to structure the book. At first, we had a terrible idea that I'm so glad that we changed about first figuring out those patterns, but then writing a fake blog about like with each pattern. which would first of all make me write lots of fake blogs, and they would tend to get similar because you would, like, how many of those can you write? And then it would be like very artificial and boring, and I wouldn't really like to read it, not to mention write it. But then Cynthia again came with a brilliant idea of reusing the world's knowledge on this and just going through tons of blog posts and qualifying them for various patterns, and then based on those examples, just figuring out what are the common either structures or ideas or some other features for every single pattern. I think we read and went through hundreds of blog posts to get it there. And yeah, the patterns we picked, let me just get the whole list so I don't miss any single one, was backhand. Then we rewrote it in X, in something, not X from Elon, but X as a placeholder.
Let's go through all of them with a quick explanation, right? So like, what is the, the first one is the bug hunt. So what is the bug hunt and why do people like it?
Yeah, it's also first because I like it most. So bug hunt is kind of like a detective story among blog posts, technical blog posts. Its main goal is that somebody was trying to find an interesting bug and either found it or not. Usually they did, or they wouldn't pretend about it. And it's also structured a little bit like a detective story, which is what I like most because it shows you the whole process of finding the solution, some dead ends, possibly. Actually, my favorite blog post of all times, I think, yeah, one of those at least, was from a CWDB by then, maybe even an intern, Michał, or maybe he was already an engineer, about a NUMA performance bug, which is also the first example, which was about something that he couldn't at first find why on specific processor architecture CWDB performs worse. And then he tried a few very interesting scenarios and techniques. Some of them failed, but got him hints what else to try. And then he finally found it. And yeah, it was like really like reading a detective story with an ending where he finds out what was the problem and solves it.
Is interesting because you're trying to get the reader in your mindset, right? You start by saying, hey, like this is what we observed. And as a reader, this is interesting because we love puzzle stories. I mean, that's one of the most rewarding parts of being an engineer. So it's almost like if you go on a roller coaster ride, right? I think the reason people like amusement parks and roller coasters is that you're exposed to danger, but in a way that you know it's safe, right? So you don't actually want to be in danger, but you want to be exposed to the thrill. And I guess the same, like when you are an engineer, you love puzzles and you love finding those issues, but your job might be on the line, right? In the real problem. So when you're reading somebody else's horror story, you're like, none of this makes any sense. And I've seen this thing. This is what we expected. I would say that it sounds to me a little bit like being on an amusement park on a roller coaster ride. I'm in danger, but not really, because you know it's already solved, it's already fixed. And to be honest, it's somebody else's problem, not mine. But I want to participate in the thrill. Is this why you like this, or do you have this is why I like it? But maybe you have your own reasons.
There is this like cathartic effect that kind of experience someone's emotions, which is usually rage in a controlled way. But I like it more for the educational aspect, because after reading one such blog, you come armed with some tools that somebody used for solving a problem. And then you can, since those stories are also interesting, so it's easy to remember them, even, you know, some details, you might just remember, oh, I think something similar happened to this guy 3 years ago. So Let me look it up and maybe I'll use the same techniques and it will still work and it will still be the real issue. So what I enjoy most is that now I can do the same magic things that Michał did when figuring it out. And before reading it, not necessarily. I could have missed something.
Awesome. And what's the second pattern?
The next pattern in the book is we rewrote it in something. So this is quite self-descriptive pattern. We mostly figured out that it's a pattern because of Rust, because there was
there's a lot of things being rewritten in Go. Most recently, one of the best performing pieces I think I've ever seen, the team at Microsoft that wrote the TypeScript interpreter in Go. I mean, it goes rounds. And I guess part of the reason why it does so well is that people love fighting. People love teaming, yes. Right? So there is always the people who you say, I rewrote this. And we recently had this own experience because we are in the process in our company of rewriting SQLite in Rust, right? Mm-hmm. Which is a part of our strategy, something very important that we're doing. And then we wrote posts about it as well. But what happens is that immediately you get debate. And you don't do it because of that, but you know that there's going to be the people who come and say, okay, great, but why not Zig? Why not go? So everybody wants to question you on why not you haven't done it in their favorite language, right? And then people start fighting. And it's fascinating to see to some extent, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's actually this Microsoft and Go piece fueled another article that I'm going to put in. Let's take a short side note, because as part of both promoting and continuing the book, we also started a small web page for gathering interesting pieces, like a continuation of those examples where we qualify blog posts and summarize them. It's called write.blog. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put a summary of a piece about choosing languages from Steve Klabnik, which is another category which we're going to reach soon. It's thoughts on trends. But it just touches on that because it was obvious that there is a trend that people fight over languages. Mm-hmm. And this article was about dealing with this trend, whether it's right or wrong and so on. So it's interesting how those are connected in a way. But yeah, we rewrote it. Pattern is quite self-descriptive. It's about rewriting things in another language. There are many purposes that this kind of article may serve. Some of them is genuine evangelism for a language. We rewrote something in Zig, which is what I wrote, and I genuinely enjoyed it, so I decided to share it. That was one of the reasons. Then, since it's a popular topic, you might also know it in form of a rant that the previous language really sucked, or maybe that the new language really sucked in some ways, so we can just let some steam off. So, that's also something that targets specific audience, really, because it usually attracts people who either like or not like the first language or the second language or are just here to fight over languages, even if they didn't read anything but the title. So, they are usually broadly discussed, where unfortunately most of the discussion is just about why one of the languages is superior over the other.
And what's next on the list?
Next is how we built it, which is also something I like to read, especially when it comes from corporate blogs. Normally I prefer blogs from individual authors where they actually write about something personal. But those are usually interesting because some things you can only write at huge scale. It's like if Netflix tells you how to write, how to implement something that handles 17 billion streams per second somewhere, it's not something that an average developer can pull off because they don't have the resources. This pattern is kind of interesting because it's better the larger the company that produced it is, and it's usually the opposite with the other patterns. So this is another category.
And I guess this does have a huge educational value, right? So like a lot of those companies will do, for example, when I was a Datadog, we did system interview questions for people who were interviewing at the company. And I guess you can learn a lot about system design at scale. Obviously, there is a difference between learning and doing. And as you mentioned, like a lot of the very interesting things you can only do once you reach a certain scale. But at least reading those blogs can teach you a lot about how those companies are usually thinking about those problems, right?
Yeah, especially if you don't work at a huge company, right. It's an interesting perspective to learn how they do it. And I also kind of enjoy this bit because often it's kind of unintuitive why those companies would even describe how they built a huge system if they potentially could just steal those secrets to competition. But
And why do you think that is?
I'm pretty sure that's mostly it's kind of like flexing and boasting, which is because often you can extend this title to how we built it and you can't, haha. Even if you have all this knowledge, you can't possibly pull the same scale
it does play a role with hiring as well, because it which is a different kind of boasting. Like, I guess, sure, I mean, your competition will read it and they think, wow, you know, but the people who are really mesmerized by those are the people who could, for engineers, especially the good engineers, want to work on interesting problems. So by showcasing to the world that you have interesting problems and you have a good methodology to solve those problems, that you're going to give the engineers the freedom, like, it's one of the ways to signal to the market, you know, come work with us, because this is a place where you can work on interesting problems, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you can, it could be even very materialistic, as in, come work with us because we have 100,000 GPUs and we happen to have written a blog post how to put them in a single data center.
Right.
So it is boasting, but usually in a positive way. It's like something I really enjoy reading. Mm-hmm.
A little bit of humble bragging never killed nobody, right? So just...
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, it's still very nice that they shared the really deep, because usually it's also interesting from the technical perspective. If it's not, then people quickly qualify it as a form of marketing bullshit and ignore it. Because readers are quite smart.
And the next one, I think, is the, you know, I actually have the book in front of me. It's the lessons learned pattern, right? So I guess this one is like, I screwed up and what we learned from it.
And this is about the indeed usually personal experience. And that doesn't mean it needs to be personal. It can be personal experience while working at code at your company, of course. And it's kind of maybe similar to the bug hunt, but there doesn't necessarily have to be a bug or a mystery or anything like that. It might be just as easy or hard as explaining an interesting issue that you've or project that you've worked on. And the main point of those articles is that you had some problems that you need to overcome while working on something, migrating a database or implementing something from scratch, and you would like to share your problems so that when other people try to work on a similar thing can just learn from your mistakes without making them the mistakes first. This one is very much about sharing your genuine experience so that other people can learn from it without, not the hard way, just like you did. That's the main point of those articles. Or it can be a post-mortem when a company needed to deal with some crash, some blackout, and they needed to do it, like, fix something fast. And while doing that, they had some specific conclusions that, if we have done something else first, we wouldn't have ended up with a problem like this.
Awesome. We're getting close to the end of it. So what is the last pattern that you would like to highlight from the book? I think there are two more, but like maybe pick your favorite between them.
Let me just summarize both. Yeah. Thoughts on trends is...
Thoughts on trend you mentioned, like in the example of Klabnik, right? Which exactly. Is like there's something going on and...
And yeah, somebody comments on it. The trick is that it's kind of a bonus pattern that you can only get a promotion to after you wrote some posts. Because if you just write your thoughts on something, there's high chance people will just ignore it because they don't know at all who you are. It's more likely that you will get this blog post with your thoughts trending if you're actually known for having some opinions in this matter. So it's best to actually first wrote some other posts in English of your choice, and then it's more likely that your thoughts on some hot topic are...
Yeah, that's the black belt of writing, right? So just that you first need to achieve people...
Yeah, it's a final stage, exactly.
Yeah, people need to respect you first. And also, obviously, there's a lot of people who have a lot of very strong opinions. It doesn't mean that they're the right opinions or even that they're well-supported, but, you know, just it is what it is, right?
I mean, well-supported is nice. Those are the best articles if they are actually supported at all. If they are not, then they are just rants, usually. So maybe less interesting, maybe more. Because if somebody is famous, either in the niche or just famous worldwide and writes anything, then it's going to land on the front page. Yeah, and the last pattern is non-marketing product perspectives, which is how to wrap something that you did, like why your product is interesting. So something that you actually want to sell to people as a company or as yourself, but in a way that you actually offer some educational content, not just marketing gibberish. So this is the final pattern that we... Oh, no, not final. There's also benchmarks and test results.
Benchmarks is my
super,
favorite. Yeah.
Super obvious. There is a way, contrary to some people think, to actually write benchmarks and test results that aren't fake and untrue and so on.
They might not be fake, but here's the thing. Here's the thing with benchmarks. The benchmark may not be fake, and at Scylla in particular, at Thursa we don't actually do a lot of benchmarking. It's not a central part of our strategy. We do a little bit, of course. Everybody has to do a little bit, but it's not a central part of our strategy. But at Scylla, it was a very central part of the strategy. And it took sometimes weeks to write a good benchmark. You really want to make sure that the methodology is sound.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter how much effort you put. It does not matter how much effort you put. Everybody's going to assume you're faking it, right? Because there's so much fakery, that's the assumption is going to be that it's... And the moment you see anything that is a little bit suspicious, people's going to start pulling on leg on that. See, like they're misleading. It's just a vendor misleading. So it's a very challenging thing to write about, right?
Yeah, we call this feature of this category guilty until proven innocent. And that's how it works with benchmarks. Unless these are benchmarks that are independent.
Can you really be proven innocent? I think that's the question, right? When you're writing something like that, there's going to be a class of people that they never believe you.
Exactly, yeah. But there is also a subcategory of this pattern where you're an independent individual that just compares two things. And then those are the most fair and usually not that nitpicked. If you're comparing your product against something else, then obviously people are going to accuse you of making it better for your case. But then again, if you just compare two SillaDB versions, then it's kind of assumed to be quite fair as well.
Yeah.
So there are variations on that, but usually this one is tricky because you're going to be accused by the whole internet that they are made to work in your favor.
Right. How does it feel to be accused by the whole internet? It does happen sometimes, especially for things that go viral. And I guess that's the conundrum. The more attention you have, the more negative attention you receive. And it doesn't seem to be linear. It seems to be super linear, right? So like the more people sometimes see something trending and they already want to put you down. So how did you deal with this? Especially as an introvert as we discussed, you call a urban legend the time we even believe to have seen you smiling once. I mean, this is a very introvert person. How do you deal with all the criticism?
I think it works the same way for most people, that after a few of your posts get more attention and also more negative attention, you just don't even bother looking at the comments at all. Just like Pekka doesn't ever do. Like our colleague and co-founder of Thursa, he just suggests not to even open the comments section. I sometimes do because sometimes there's constructive criticism in there.
Right.
Once or twice, but usually it's some... usually it's posts from people who just read the title, if that. I just don't deal with it because I inherently not really care that much about criticism that isn't constructive at all. Like it's just really, truly doesn't bother me.
Okay. What's the scariest thing? Because you've done a lot of public speaking as well, which I guess one thing follows the other, right? As you start writing more, you get more invitations to speak. What's the scariest between the two, especially for a person with your personality?
Yeah, so I'm absolutely fine with online conferences. In-person conferences, I haven't been on one for ages now, but I would probably still be a little bit nervous, but mostly because I can't have the amount of helper scripts and other things on my screen that nobody can see in case I get stuck for a while. The trick with drinking the water from the bottle is great. I used it at SillaDB Summit for like a few times. If you get stuck, just drink some water. It looks natural. And
yeah.
Nobody cares. But yeah.
Well, and it doesn't. And if you're really nervous, it doesn't even have to be water. It just have to be in a water bottle.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, something that actually helped me a lot with writing too was the first Scylla Summit where I went and I had a presentation there. which I also failed to notice that I was scheduled for it, because actually you wrote to me and asked if I wanted to have it, but it landed in spam somehow. And then you assumed that I agreed because I didn't respond, I guess. And
then, if you then haven't someone, said anything, it means yes, you know.
Exactly. And I saw myself pretty much in the agenda and I was like, what?
What?
Yeah. So I was super nervous. I even printed out my whole transcript of what I wanted to say and so on. But then when I went to questions, which is usually the most scary part for stage writers, I realized that majority of the audience doesn't care at all. And after 5 minutes, they just stare at their phones. And those people who do care aren't going to just ask you some question to trick you into answering wrong. They're just genuinely interested in something. And Right. It's usually super easy to answer. And it's absolutely fine to just answer that you don't know and you can follow up later. So after that, I decided that, it was actually not super scary at all.
And I guess as with everything in life, I mean, things are scary, but then you're brave enough and you do it. And then the second time is easier, and then the third time is a little bit easier. And after a while, that's it. I mean, there's no novelty. I think a lot of stage fright comes from novelty, right? A lot of fear that people have come from the unknown. And after you've done it a couple of times, you know, you understand that it's okay, right? So you get used to it.
Absolutely, yeah. It's just kind of routine. I mean, I'm out of this particular routine because I'm not much into traveling. But if I had to do it and signed up for something, I wouldn't be particularly nervous about it.
Right. Sarna, it's been a tremendous pleasure to talk to you today. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Is there
Likewise.
Anything else you would like the listeners to know? And this is your moment. So like anything you want to talk about, like the upcoming book, you know, just where can people find the book, your blog?
Everything about the book and more you can find at write.blog. I guess we can put it somewhere on the screen.
write.blog, so that's okay.
Yeah, so that's where we continue qualifying and triaging interesting blog posts into patterns. And there's also a link to the book in case you missed it. Otherwise. I would encourage everyone to read it because it's not just about patterns. It's also really condensed knowledge on actually working on your drafts, how to structure your posts, how to simply write well, simply in English, which is condensed Cynthia knowledge. That part was mostly written by her. And I also learned a lot while reading her chapters.
Your native language is Polish, right? So, I mean, just writing the amount, it's definitely impressive writing the amount that you do and the quality that you do, even with help. I mean, don't discount yourself too much. It's definitely...
Yeah, you just need to play lots of video games and they're in English. So
that's right.
Yeah. I mean, when you were young, I haven't played a video game. Decades probably, but now it's also important for not native English speakers, which is majority of the authors of blog posts, that nobody cares if you make any kind of typo or your grammar is incorrect. If somebody nitpicks your grammar, that means that the technical part was already spotless, so it's great. It means that your blog post was really amazing.
That's great. Sarna, great pleasure having you today. Thank you so much for your time and all the best, man.
Likewise.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the GoTo Podcast. Head over to gotopia.tech to discover lots more content from the brightest minds in software development.